John did such a good job and quickly, I didn't even get my cell phone turned off.
How you did on stage, sir.
I appreciate that, John. I have a daughter in college, you know, it's much worse to get an E minus on exam than have a car go over the cliff. That's my problem, you know. The exam is her problem.
But it's very pleasant to be here today, and glad you got this up and going. I've been coming to these meetings, Sam, I don't know how long ago, and Jane Brown, how long ago we started having these, and I've been coming forever, so I'm honored to be your speaker today.
Well, I'd like to talk to you about something a little arcane, but I think you will find it interesting. You may know in March 6th of this year, was the 150th anniversary of the Dred Scott decision. That was the United States Supreme Court case of Dred Scott. And I will give you this little bit of constitutional advice. No one thinks the Dred Scott case is rightly decided. That was meant to be funny, I tell my students, I teach appellate student commissioners at Columbia, I tell them, you know, when the first rule of appellate work is always laugh at the judge's jokes. And by halfway through the course, their eyes glaze over, and I tell them, that was the first rule I told you. But anyhow, that meant to be funny that everyone thinks Dred Scott is wrongly decided. The United States Supreme Court case. And not only that, but the Oxford Companion to the Supreme Court says it's the worst decision ever rendered by the Supreme Court. David Curie, some of you know, wrote in his Constitution of the United States, he says it's bad policy, bad judicial politics, and bad law. Worst constitutional decision ever, worst atrocity in the Supreme Court's history, most disastrous opinion. The Supreme Court, these are all different great scholars and judges. Most odious action ever undertaken by a branch of the federal government, a ghastly error, a tragic failure of all the terms, a gross abuse of trust, a lie before God. Father, that was a Missourian. Thomas Hart Benton wrote that, a lie before God. Abomination, judicial review at its worst. As you may know, Lincoln in his inaugural criticized judicial review and said she got away with it because of Dred Scott. Charles Evans Hughes, when Chief Justice, said self-inflicted wound. There's some books with that title. There have been, as you can tell by those quotes, there have been all sorts of analysis of the United States Supreme Court decision. But most interestingly, there's been almost no analysis of the Missouri Supreme Court decision. And some of you know that the case was at the Missouri Supreme Court before it went to the United States Supreme Court. The Missouri Supreme Court, I'll tell you the bottom line first, those are in Belmont, it was a 2-1 vote. At that time, the Missouri Supreme Court only had 3 judges. And by the way, they'd been elected for the first time ever in 1850. Until 1850, they were appointed by the governor, period. No confirmation, no fuss, no muss. They were just appointed by the governor. But in 1850, heck of a deal. In 1850, Missourians adopted electing the Supreme Court judges, so that was the first elected Supreme Court that we had. And 2-1, they voted that Dred Scott was property. Now, the two in the majority said the fact that Dred Scott had lived in free territory, as you may know, for 4 years, he had lived in free territory, not only had he really lived there, his alleged owner had moved back to Missouri and left him. It's what's parts of now where Wisconsin and Illinois had left him there, and he got married and done several things like that, but the majority said that didn't affect the fact he was still property instead of slave. Now, the reason I give you that arcane sort of background is to tell you that I think there are 3 or 4 lessons for judges and for lawyers in the Missouri Supreme Court's case. And by the way, this is an original article I'm working on. And so you're getting the benefit of getting a little preview of it. This is, we used to call that kitchen test. We'll call this a restroom test of this thing. The first one is that raising issues, the court deciding issues not raised by the parties.
When Van Scott first brought his case in St. Louis, there was a civil law. The civil law, they were called freedom suits. The simple law was that if you were no longer a slave and you were free, that you could sue for your freedom. I know it sounds odd, but this had been the law in Missouri. The freedom law was a territorial law. Went back to 1808. It was reenacted in Missouri State in 1820, then reacted several times. But that law very plainly said that that if you were free, you could sue. And so he sued, and his case was a garden variety suit. And some of you know, he won the jury trial. With a jury of 12 white males sitting there, he won. He won. They said, yeah, there's enough evidence. He lived there in Wisconsin and Illinois, and he was free in every regard. His owner treated him as free, and he acted free, and he got married, and all of this stuff. Not a tough case. Well, it came to the Missouri Supreme Court, and as you may know, that was 1850, and already the attitudes about slavery, about Missouri status, had hardened. And two of them, now these are popular elected judges, two of these judges were just absolutely positively against the whole theory of freedom suits. And they are the ones who first raised the issue. It was not in the briefs, by the way, there was no oral argument. Even though that was the way they did cases that day, there was no oral argument. Two of the judges raised the issue themselves about, well, there's got to be some way to say that he's not free. And so I think the first thing is that judges should not decide issues that are not raised by the parties, that are not raised in the briefs, that are not raised in anything at all. And of course, many of you know I'm on very firm ground in saying this. Almost all the writers on the appellate process said that. Most importantly, Chief Justice Tommy, you know, he's the one of those, the Supreme Court case in Dred Scott. He wrote in a very famous case, Russell v. Salad, it's an 1851 Supreme Court case, where he wrote that, he says, from the time of Chancery, from its earliest history to the present time, no court should decide anything that's not in the papers itself. Even more shocking, the author of the Missouri Supreme Court was a judge named William Scott. And he said, in a case involving the governor, by the way, in the Pacific Railroad, he said, we expressed no opinion about this question. It has not been argued on the part of any party in the case, and used that to decide a case. So I think that is the first issue. And by the way, the judges were very partisan, the two in the majority, were extremely, I thought that was said later, but the two judges in the majority of the Supreme Court were extremely partisan. Now, this is a different kind of politics. There were two kinds of Democrats. There were two kinds of Democrats. There were free soil Democrats, and there were very strongly pro-slavery Democrats. Most of them were in the very pro-slavery camp, you might guess. And they very much wanted to get rid of some politicians at that time who were of the free soil. Free soil meant that the soil was free, you didn't take slavery there, or at least they voted on it there. It was kind of a muddled position at time, but some combination of those two is what it was. That's the first thing. Now, a bigger issue, number two, stare decisis. Courts in the 19th century, John, you got that coming, courts in the 19th century respected stare decisis. Chief Justice Tommy wrote several times that in matters of property, there were stare decisis. The Missouri Supreme Court, they were very big on let the decision stand. If there were precedent, there were litigants, they didn't even talk a lot of the courts today, if you can believe that. Well, my goodness gracious, in Missouri, there were case after case after case. They began for three decades, for 30 years before the Dred Scott case, there had been freedom suits. There was an 1824 case about a slave who came from Carolina, Illinois, and then came to Missouri. By the way, she's been away for 3 years. She was, came to Missouri Supreme Court. The Missouri Supreme Court said, freedom of suit law applies, she's free. There are several other cases. But, you know, in 1836, which is a scant few years before the Dred Scott, in 1836, there was a case about a slave named Rachel. She's been in Illinois at Fort Snelling, that's one place Dred Scott was. She'd been there for a few years, came to St. Louis. Sure enough, the Missouri Supreme Court upheld the claims in that case. So there were 30 years of precedence. 30 years of precedence. That, by the way, the Supreme Court just overrules with the slap of my hand. In the Dred Scott case, that's the Missouri Supreme Court. Just overrules without thinking about it. Third, this is kind of implicit what I've been saying, is any respect for the legislature. The legislature passed the freedom suit laws. The legislature passed the freedom suit laws several times. So they tweak with it at times, like legislatures like to do. It's true they tweak with it, but they have passed those laws, and they make the freedom suit law mean something. The Missouri Supreme Court doesn't even cite the freedom suit law. They don't make that unconstitutional for the credit. They don't even sign it. You know, why do they want freedom suits? And there are a lot of freedom suits. There's a project at Washington University in St. Louis, and it's on the web, where they list all these freedom suits over here. There are a lot of freedom suits. There are a lot of freedom suits. There are 20 or 30 just a few years before Dred Scott. So, you know, no respect for the judicial agreements at all in that regard. The whole opinion is really, you know, I don't want to say anti-anti-anti, right? I have the clerk's work on that. That's your advocate job. Three or four here, I'm not a friendly audience. You know, I think I said, well, it's anti-anti-anti, right? I don't know. They're going to make an argument either way. John Wood would offer a headline, and I say, hey, he probably knows this. He's very well. I won't put you on the spot to ask him, but I just wanted to say, you probably know it. And you've got something new, obviously, your neighbor, you know it. the whole Missouri Supreme Court opinion just reads like a hooray. You know, it's just outrageous in several things. Let me give you a little flavor of that. For instance, the majority judge in the Supreme Court thinks that one of the crowning arguments is this argument. For the condition of our slaves in the United States is contrasted with the state of the miserable race in Africa, where their civilization, intelligence, and instruction in religious truths are considered, and the means now employed to restore them to the countries which they have been torn, bearing within the blessings of civilized life. We are almost persuaded, this is a conclusion of the opinion, we are almost persuaded that the introduction of slavery amongst us was in the providence of God, who makes the evil passions of men subservient to his own glory, a means of placing that unhappy race within the pale of civilized nations. Now, speaking of tortured reasoning, not only the sinners who said it, the dissenter points out the tortured reasoning, and the dissenter, who's a hero of this title, his name's Gamble, Judge Gamble, just spell like a bad thing to do. Judge Gamble points out to him, you know, even on that issue, you know, that God gave him all these twists and turns to get this done. He was very cool about it. The more flavor of the Missouri Supreme Court's opinion, how I took it to rain, listen to this. They're overruling all these cases, which they just list. Some of them don't even list case names, they just list a citation, like they're ordering from a serial killer catalog, you know, they just list them in order there. I guess I hate myself, serial killer, so I didn't have a catalog anymore. but that's the way they're listed. The majority says, this is the reason to overrule our cases. This is the reason to overrule the legislature. This is the reason to overrule the president. I'm going to give you the main thing. It's not that long. I'm going to give you the main argument. Times are not now, as they once were, when the former decisions on this subject were made. Since then, not only individuals, but states are possessed with a dark and filled spirit in relation to slavery, whose gratification is sought in the pursuit of measures, whose inevitable consequence is the overthrow and destruction of our government in Missouri. Under these circumstances, it does not behoove the state of Missouri to show the least countenance to any measure that would gratify that mean spirit. Missouri is willing to assume her full responsibility for the existence of slavery within its limits. She does not seek to share her divided with others. Although we may, for our own sakes, regret the avarice and hard-heartedness of the progenitors of those who are now so sensitive on the subject. What it means by that is they introduced the slave trade before Missouri was even a state. That's what he's trying to say. We will not go to them to learn law, morality, or religion. Maybe you should reason to open the rule of Jesus. Goodness gracious. Judge Gamble simply says that we should respect precedent in every regard. He said we should go by precedent. Now, you know, dissenters, and we have some judges here, dissenters always believe that their dissent will have great and meaningful and lasting impact. And of course, Judge Gamble writes a very major decision when she says there's 30 years of cases, we should go to the 30 years. Times may be a little different, but they're not that different from what they were. Of course, some of you know the rest of the story. The rest of the story is the Civil War came, the two Southern judges were carried out of the Supreme Court in their chairs. They refused to peacefully leave, by the way. So they were carried out by the Union troops in their chairs out of the courthouse. They looked around for who to be governor because the governor had gone to Texas, some of you know. So they're part of the legislature. And they looked around and they made the dissenter, Hamilton Gamble, the state governor of Missouri. And he was the governor, unlike he saw that convention, and he became that. And so anytime you see some of those Missouri Supreme Court judges running dissenters, running dissents, becoming dissenters, you know many of them are really running for governor. They hope to achieve that. Well, that's all I had in terms of prepared remarks. Now, John, how are you doing on time?
Well, we're fine on time. We can take some questions.
So John says we can take some questions. So John, you